From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deckett. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, coming to you live-ish in the midst of a global pandemic. We've been getting a lot of feedback, a lot of responses from our fellow listeners regarding our latest update on COVID-19, and we appreciate these check-ins. We want to hear from you. As always, you are the most important part of this show. Let's check in with each other. Noel, Matt, Paul, how you guys doing?
Much the same. Pretty okay. I love that you said live-ish. It just, my mind immediately went to, well, at least we're alive. So that's maybe where the ish part comes in. Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like I'm with you. I feel all of your individual warmths emanating from my screen. And honestly, I look forward to this. It kind of is the thing that breaks up the monotony and feels like real human contact. I love it. Maybe this is the new way. If it is, I'm okay with that. As long as we can hang out.
Yes, things are going pretty well over here. My wife recently had a quarantine birthday, and we were able to utilize the old hangout for that, which was really nice. We, you know, just getting, like you said, Noel, getting to see a face and hear a voice of someone familiar is really comforting right now. But I would counter that with I was forced, it was necessary for me to take a trip physically to a grocery store just momentarily, and the anxiety that I felt just walking near any other person, it's pretty harrowing that I feel that personally, and I'm assuming we all are feeling that at this moment. So I would just say connect with whoever you can virtually right now.
It's interesting. Like, I mean, even like taking walks, like I've been going to the park and trying to get out and stuff. And I live near a park and people are keeping their distance and being respectful. But there is that weird feeling when you're passing a little too close to somebody where you almost look at them suspiciously, or you hold your breath even, or like cross on the other side of the street. It's a weird impulse that I'm not used to feeling. And it's a very alien thing for me. But I'm kind of having to get used to it, which I don't want to get used to it. I don't know how else to describe it.
Probably the last mode of transport that will remain open for most people in the United States is going to be the automobile. Domestic flights will, you know, get increasingly sparse, right? I think Delta, for instance, has maybe a 10% demand for flights now. A lot of international borders are closed for maritime and air traffic. But here in the U.S., we still have the amazing capacity to literally wake up and, if you want, drive across an entire continent. It's tough to do it in a day, but you can drive from sea to shining sea. You won't be stopped at a state border. You won't have to, you know, apply to enter Maine, for instance, or California. I mean, this country is so huge that many U.S. residents, the four of us included, have never been to all 50 states. This is amazing and unusual. The U.S. is a car culture, and people are appreciating it more and more now. Many of our fellow listeners have been, you know, getting cabin fever and driving out to rural areas just to get some vitamin D from sunshine, just to be out and around nature. But today's question is, will this continue to be the case? The car, the opportunity afforded to us by the automobile is a tremendous amount of freedom, but will Big Brother get under your hood? Here are the facts. Auto manufacturers are increasingly moving vehicles online. If you buy a car that was made in ballpark the last 8 years or so, you probably have any number of neat electronic capabilities, right? Like touch screens, onboard satellite navigation, these customized bespoke updates to the music you like, the podcasts you listen to, the news that some AI or algorithm thinks you prefer. I know that two of us recently bought vehicles. Noel, you bought a vehicle a while back. I have one now. I finally had to say goodbye to my Monte Carlo. And when I sat in my current vehicle for the first time, I felt like I was in the future. I could just touch stuff and things happened. That's amazing. You know, I went from not having like power windows to all of a sudden having this thing that will, you know, kind of nanny state me if it thinks I'm backing up in too aggressive a manner. I mean, what are you guys' experiences when you're driving?
Well, first off, Ben, you're bearing the lead. What kind of car did you get? I don't even think I know about this.
I refuse to disclose.
Are you serious?
I have a Ford Escape. Oddly ironic, or perhaps apt as a car name in these are troubled times.
Plenty of room for your bug out bag too in the back of a Ford Escape. Love that. I have a Honda Fit, which is, you know, a little less roomy than an Escape, but still has a nice little hatchback and plenty of room for all my dirty laundry and empty gym bag, which I have pledged to turn into a bug out bag after that episode. I'm going to take our own advice. But yeah, it's the first time I've ever had a backup camera. First time I've ever had a car that was very digitally driven, for sure. No question about it. And it is an adjustment. It's convenient. But as we get into this topic today, we're going to see that there are some potential nefarious possibilities that can go along with that.
Mm-hmm. This is an idea that that you thought up first, Matt. I mean, not the idea of digitally connecting cars, but you raised the issue that this is a growing concern for a lot of people. It's a convenience, but it's also a concern. You know, anybody who has a web-connected car is encountering all these neato digital capabilities, but we're also seeing the capability to limit the performance of a vehicle, such as engine governance, right? That's an old technology. For instance, people in the US and Latin America undoubtedly know the Bluebird school buses. You guys know the big yellow honkers that for some reason still don't have seatbelts.
I was about to say, it's always blown my mind. How is that okay?
The driver has a seatbelt, which I think is weirdly unfair, but and not reassuring. But those engines have governor switches on them, meaning they can't. While the engine itself can power the vehicle to go at a pretty high rate of speed, there are safeguards put in to prevent it from reaching that speed, and you can engineer via software limits on your engine's performance if, for instance, you don't want your vehicle to go over 80 miles per hour, for instance. If you want to keep it at a certain speed for, let's say, economical concerns or safety concerns. The Ford Escape that I have, for example, has something called MyKey technology. And when you have this limit programmed in, depending on which key you use, the touchscreen, right when you get around 79 miles an hour, the touchscreen will pop up and it'll say, your speed is limited by the MyKey. In an ideal world, this helps parents keep their kids from hot rodding around over the speed limit and straight into a fender bender. It also helps owners of fleets manage their individual vehicles, from truck companies to rental empires like Hertz or something. Again, in an ideal world, remote control over your vehicle makes the world a safer place. But we do not live in an ideal world.
No, we don't. Let's imagine, you know, it's not going to be too much of a stretch. But let's imagine, if you would, a world in which government, or even worse, a private entity can render your vehicle useless. Absolutely brick that thing the way a company might do that to your phone, or, you know, rendering your phone obsolete as more and more updates come out. The idea of planned obsolescence, or in the same way as your video game console or PC, you know, might start to feel a little long in the tooth as digital updates begin to outpace the hardware.
Well, yeah, and also imagine a world where a tiny little device connected up to your vehicle, no matter how old it is, to your onboard diagnostics port, could track all of your movements, everywhere you've ever been, where you are right now, how fast you're going. Imagine that some tiny little device could do that, installed by anyone, or a very similar device that is just magnetically placed underneath your vehicle by whoever, can see exactly where you are, where you're going at any time, when you're going home, when you're going to work, all of your routes that you generally take. Imagine that you'd only have to spend $40 to, someone would only have to spend $40 to know exactly what you do every day. And then you don't even need that device anymore because of the technology we're discussing here. It's already inside your vehicle if you have a newer one. The big question here is, how are we going to balance the freedoms that we hold so dear? Like we said at the top, being able to just drive wherever you want, whenever you want, because you are a person who has freedom. How are we going to balance that with all of these new technologies and possible control mechanisms that are being developed and are already in place?
Ask yourself, how long can you drive when and where you wish? We'll tackle that question after a word from our sponsor. Here's where it gets crazy. The increasing interconnectivity, dare I say the hyper interconnectivity of vehicles to the web, brings a ton of convenience and it brings a load of worrying potential. This is a phenomenon that was once hailed as the Internet of Things. Our good pal Jonathan Strickland covered this in depth on Tech Stuff if you would like to learn more about it. But we know, again, we say this every time we run into a developing technology episode, we know again that technology always outpaces legislation. Currently, governments around the world are scrambling to catch up with the things that your software in your car can do. In fact, these concerns have already reached the highest court in the United States. Back in January of 2013, think about that, 7 years ago, the Supreme Court weighed in on GPS tracking of vehicles in a case called the United States versus Jones. What happened there? What was the gist?
Well, let's jump in really quickly and just talk about those GPS devices. So a single tiny little GPS device, there are so many of them out there on the market for that are consumer level grade. Again, they're fairly cheap. They're extremely effective. It's a tiny little device, generally with a magnet on the bottom. It goes or is placed most commonly underneath the chassis or on the bottom of the chassis of a vehicle, the metal parts underneath. And it's placed there in many cases by a private investigator or by a law enforcement officer. It will be placed to track a person of interest, whether it's in an infidelity case or, you know, tracking perhaps a narcotics, someone who is assumed to be within the narcotics trade, for any number of reasons. You place this device underneath a vehicle, and then that device is connected up through the same thing that your cell phone uses, the same networks that your cell phone uses to connect to everything, and through the GPS system. And it will tell that whoever is tracking that vehicle exactly where it is, where it's going, where it's been. It just knows everything about that vehicle. Now, when there's this case that we're about to discuss has to do with what happens when someone finds a GPS tracker on their vehicle, their personal vehicle?
Right, right, exactly. There are a couple of different ways that these things can work. There are real-time updaters, and then there are also updaters that just log transport. And the tricky thing about those is that the person using that GPS device has, if it's not real-time updating, they have to physically go and take the device back, plug it into a system, and then download the information.
Yeah, but generally the ones that are used now, even the cheapest ones, it just connects to an app on a phone, mm-hmm. and its updates are being sent continuously.
Exactly, exactly. The technology is there. In this case, in the 2013 case of the United States versus Jones, police placed a GPS tracker on the car, on the chassis, like you said, Matt, of someone that they suspected was selling cocaine. They suspected this person was selling cocaine because this person was selling cocaine. You know, I'm not the Chief Justice. I'm not bound by the same rules of legality, so we can just say it. They had probable cause. They had reasonable suspicion. You know what I mean? They weren't just walking around parking lots going, I don't know, that Honda Civic looks like that spoiler is suspicious. Let's see what that guy's getting into. The police had received a warrant. They were legally allowed to do this, but they were only allowed to do it under certain constraints, and they exceeded those constraints. There were two constraints. First, they were only allowed to monitor this vehicle for a specific length of time. And secondly, they were only allowed to monitor it for a particular geographic region. They went over the limit on both of those. They exceeded the geography and they exceeded the length of time. The federal attorney argued that there is no expectation of privacy when you are traveling on public roads. It's kind of like how you have no right to tell somebody not to take a photograph of you if you are in a crowded public space. If you go to a park for a concert or something like that, and someone on stage takes a picture of the entire audience, then you do not have the right, because you are in a public space, you do not have the right to pull that photograph. You have no rights to it. However, the Supreme Court agreed with the defense attorney because the defense attorney claimed this was a violation of this client's Fourth Amendment right. And that the Fourth Amendment, again, is the right against unlawful search and seizure. So they're saying this was a violation of personal privacy, despite the fact that this vehicle was traveling on public roads.
That's crazy, right? That concept that there's no expectation of privacy when traveling on public roads. I mean, I get it. I think it's just the knowing that when you're inside your vehicle, Noel, I don't know if you feel this way. I think this is just a psychological thing that we've discussed before on this show. You feel very much that you are in this private space.
Yeah, it's sort of an illusion of privacy, though, isn't it?
Because it's exactly what it is.
Aren't tinted windows even kind of illegal? Like, isn't that a thing?
Past a certain tent level, yeah.
Past absolutely. A certain, so that's almost, I mean, again, not the two ideas are intertwined, but, you know, there is an expectation that law enforcement should be able to see into your vehicle to make sure you're not doing anything illegal, right, while you're driving. And so that expectation of privacy is absolutely an illusion for sure, yeah.
So here's another thing I want to bring up with you guys. Okay, so in another case that happened pretty recently, this has to do with property rights. A man who was suspected of selling methamphetamines also had a GPS placed on his vehicle. And in this case, the man discovered it after 10 days or somewhere around 10 days. And the police officers are getting all the information and tracking it. And then all of a sudden the GPS stops putting out data. They suspect that the man has taken, removed it from his vehicle, discovered it and removed it. So they then get a warrant, another warrant, because he had to get one in the first place, right, to put the GPS on his vehicle. They got another warrant to search, I think it was his parents' house and the surrounding areas, like some of the surrounding areas, to find the GPS because they were charging him with theft of property.
Mm-hmm.
Noel, if you found, or Ben, if you found a GPS device on your vehicle, would you remove it or would you just leave it there?
No, you put it on another vehicle. That's obvious.
This comes up a lot in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. They call them LoJacks. I think that's actually a brand, but I think it's sort of like one of the most popular like car tracker things that are used for theft prevention that like individuals can buy, or there may even come stock in certain cars, but they call it that a lot in the show. And I wonder if it's sort of like calling a mimeograph machine a Xerox, or like, you know, calling a soda a Coke or something like that.
Right. But internet search of Google.
Exactly.
Yeah. But LoJack was first commercially available.
That makes sense. Exactly. So no, to your question, it reminds me of getting your car booted. For example, let's say you get your car booted. To me, that is, unjust seizure of my property, because it's usually by a private entity rather than some law enforcement agency. And then they put a sticker on your window that, you know, tells you the number of the call so they can come back, and then you can pay them and they take it off. On the flip side, if I found someone had placed something on my vehicle, I feel like it would be my right to remove it, in the same way it'd be my right to remove a boot if I was so inclined. But they, similarly, they would probably charge you with destruction of property if you remove one of those.
Yeah, that's correct. And we have to note here, this will be important later in this episode, we have to note that both cases, Matt, the case you brought up, and the Supreme Court case mentioned earlier, both of them focus on crime. They don't focus on, for instance, a private investigator. That's where we get to a gray area, right? They don't focus on maybe a jilted lover or something like that. They don't focus on a helicopter parent. But all of those scenarios come into play. Currently, if you're a driver and you have concerns about this, first off, you're absolutely right. You're not crazy to be concerned about it. But the law here in the U.S. seems to be trending toward your side for now, but there are still serious questions. One of the first ones would be, what about GPS vehicle tracking confined to a specific group? Like a company fleet. Currently, there are no federal laws and no state laws that expressly forbid the use of GPS vehicle tracking for commercial purposes. So you drive a Cisco truck and it's the company truck, then they can track you. They can do whatever they want because it's not your vehicle. You rent a car, for instance, then your car or the car you're driving can absolutely be monitored. And there's a very valid argument that it should, because it's someone else's property. Think about it like a work laptop or a work cell phone. Your employer can both monitor your usage of that device, and if they desire, they can flip a switch and restrict your capabilities. Like if you are using a work phone and putting any private data on there, it is simply naive to think that that is somehow still your data. Your company, your big brother, whatever your corporate overlord is, they have it. They legally have it now.
Yeah, well, it's the same way of the expectation of privacy in emails, with work emails, right? I mean, it would be a bad look, but if the powers that be wished to do so, they could find out what we discuss in our emails at work, couldn't they?
I hope so. Our puns are on fire. We are good at those. And yeah, you're absolutely right. So why should a vehicle logically be any different? It shouldn't. There's no valid case that a company car should be any different from a company laptop. But let's take it away from that. Let's say it's not a vehicle that you're using for work. Let's say it's not a vehicle you're renting. Let's say you own a car, but you don't own it outright. You, like million of other people in the world, are paying off a car loan. Let's say here in the U.S., you have the average monthly car payment. Just right now in 2020, the average monthly car payment is going to be $381 a month for a used car, or a recent model used car. It's going to be $530 a month if you, for some reason, bought a new car. Why did you do that? Why did you buy a brand new car? Let's cut past my car stuff TED talk, but please don't buy a brand new car. What happens if you can't make that payment? If you are $381 or $530 short for a month, what happens then? I mean, maybe you paid on time, right? But there was some kind of gremlin on the wing of the web that interfered, and whomever is in charge of your loan or whoever your lien holder is, they don't see that payment in your system. What happens?
It's a good question. I mean, you know, it's the classic model of this is that they come and repo it, or they send someone to your home or to your place of business to repossess the car. But this would be a much more quickly executable form of this, and it could happen for a much less egregious infraction. It would take a lot to get your car repoed, but like you said, Ben, if you miss one payment, all of a sudden they flip a switch and master control, and you know, you try to start up your car or you use your, what is it, My Key or whatever, your keyless entry, and nothing happens. You know, they literally have put the kibosh on you driving your car because of what could very well have been a clerical error. Maybe you're stranded in the middle of nowhere. You know, I mean, who knows? I mean, I would hope there would be recourse that you could reach out and sort it all out. But yeah, that's absolutely possible.
Clunk, clunk, womp, womp. Nothing happens when you try to start, even if you're in an emergency, right? Imagine a message plays on your sound system, your cutesy touchscreen pops up, and you are informed that this vehicle will not operate until payment is registered. And if payment is not registered in X number of days, the lien holder will take possession of your vehicle. Should it be legal for that authority to automatically shut off your car? Like, let's say you're escaping a disaster scenario. You know what I mean? What if this is a system in place when the next hurricane hits Louisiana and someone is trying like hell to get out of the way of disaster, but because of $381, they're stuck there and the water's rising? I mean, that's an extreme example, but it's possible.
Oh, absolutely. It is an extreme example, but it is creepy to imagine it happening that way. The most common way this occurs is that, let's say you've purchased a vehicle from a smaller company or a smaller car lot somewhere that's probably used. Very often, those vehicles will have a hidden GPS tracker attached to that vehicle. And very, very commonly, it's what we were talking about before, the same place where a lot of, like, if you go get your emissions tested, your onboard diagnostics port or OBD2, a lot of times, that's where, if you're going to get emissions, sometimes you'll get someone plugging into that port. Whoever's running your emissions test will plug into there. It gets all the information on your vehicle of what's occurring. The most common thing that will occur here is that the owner of that vehicle, the car lot, the car, you know, used car dealer, will have something attached on that port, and they will be able to track your vehicle wherever it goes. In the case that we're outlining here, you miss a payment, depending on what the contract looks like that you signed. So if you miss two payments, probably they would be able to know exactly where your vehicle is at 3 a.m. on any given day, and a tow truck would be able to pick it up without you having any idea that it happened.
Until you see that empty parking spot, right?
And it's gone.
Yeah. And this is just the beginning. We're starting with a microcosmic example. We're gonna pause for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll be back with the larger and perhaps more troubling implications. ¶¶ And we're back. So let's go bigger. What about state control of vehicles? As a matter of fact, instead of going bigger, let's go sci-fi. Everybody get your movie voices on. In a world, etc. Remember those old scenes so common in TV and film where there's this gung-ho police officer or detective and they're chasing a bad guy and they gotta catch up with the bad guy, and they see, usually in a film, it's like a slick, badass 1970s muscle car, but our Dudley Do-Right is chasing the bad guy, and then they see somebody roll up in a cool car and they're like, get out, I'm commandeering the vehicle, and they hop in, and there's a montage and a chase scene, and everything ends with a happy note, and they've caught the perp. Imagine a world where an authority can hop in to your car and then say the right passcode to your car's system, and boom, it's off to the races. You never enter the equation. They just used your car for state business. Imagine where that's legal. Better yet, imagine a world where a municipal, state, or federal authority can, say, shut down all civilian vehicles in the case of unrest, you know, like a riot, like a pandemic. That's a little close to home, but like a pandemic, like a natural disaster, or a protest, for instance. Or maybe shut it down because there is a state-sanctioned violent activity. A central authority with the right kind of networking could do this. And that's one of the things about autonomous vehicle systems that I wish we were talking about more often. Now, autonomous vehicles will objectively save lives. If you have a city where every car is functioning in a network system, there are going to be fewer deaths. There are going to be fewer vehicular injuries, but there are also going to be tremendous opportunities for whomever Big Brother or Little Brother is to just, you know, shut down the city. You don't have to shut down the whole city. If there's a neighborhood that is maybe protesting something, and you don't want media coverage, and you don't want people physically getting out of that neighborhood to say, hey, they're killing us all because we're some, you know, like we have a religion or an ethnicity to which this government or authority objects, then you can just shut down the cars and you can blockade the roads. You can turn off traffic. We're not there yet, but the technology is on the way. It's closer than you think, and it always starts with the best of intentions.
I have a feeling we're going to learn about it in like 2 months from now, a month from now, after everybody's trying to get back to normal, and then the pandemic gets worse, and then they just shut off all the cars. Sorry, it's a little...
Yikes, Matt.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it makes me think of like a positive implementation of this in like science fiction is there's an anime show called Psychopass that is about like these cops that have these particular guns that will not... they will not activate, for lack of a better term, unless they detect certain characteristics in a subject. Like, they won't allow you to, you know, use lethal force on a subject unless they meet certain criteria, and the gun can literally like look up the person's background and it's sort of like pre-crime, kind of like in Minority Report. But it's similar where, like, you know, it's bricked, the gun's bricked unless it's given the go-ahead from HQ, right, to be used. Similar with cars, it could be used for positive stuff. Like maybe it could detect that someone's had too much alcohol and the car won't function, right? Maybe there's a way that like, you know, would actually prevent people from being their worst enemies, which people often do. They know they shouldn't drive, but they're drunk and it makes them feel like they're invincible, so they do stupid stuff. If the car itself would not allow you to drive it, that would be a positive use of this kind of technology, right?
And it could potentially detect a key code or something that was invalid or didn't have a special, you know, secondary authentication process to it, so you could prevent theft, perhaps. I mean, there are possible things there that could be good.
Yeah, well, this is a funny story. Is a Larry David moment with my old Monte Carlo. Now you guys know this because it's made me late to shows before, but. My car had a malfunction in the security system so that every so often, not every time, but every so often, I would try to start the car and it would be convinced I was trying to steal it because the authentication didn't work. And so I would have to do a reset of the system, which was very easy to do, but it took about 10 minutes. So sometimes I would just be 10 or 12 minutes late because my car decided that I was trying to commit Grand Theft Auto.
On yourself.
On myself. This is a known issue with Chevys. But the implications are right. You know, the technology has always been a double-edged sword. It's always been the darkness that stares back at us. It's always been the gun that fires at the person wielding the gun. You know what I mean? Ever since the days of fire, right? It can keep you warm. It can burn you. That is the same thing with every single piece of technology humanity has ever made. We don't make stuff that cannot also be used for terrible things. And right now, Big Brother, whether you want to call Big Brother a manufacturer, a private software service, or a government, they want into your vehicle. And they're already inside. You know what I mean? Like, how terrifying is it that Facebook can have OS and software in a vehicle? I don't know if there's a like solid Facebook OS for a vehicle right now, but the app alone is scary enough. And the initial arguments for this are some of the ones we've outlined. The first argument, of course, is valid, and it's let's keep people safe. We want to keep an eye on you, not to stop you, not to hinder you, but to help you. And then there's the other idea, hey, let's make things uniquely enjoyable. Oh, you're a fan of explosions in the sky? Here's some other music you might like on your drive. You know what I mean?
Man, explosions in the sky. What such good driving music.
It's true.
It really is, actually.
Then the idea is, the third idea is somewhat aspirational. Let's build a better system. We're not in your car because we want to track your GPS, because we want to monitor you, and because we want to use that data to affect your insurance premiums, or we want to use that data to figure out where and when we can stop traffic. Let's use that data in aggregate to figure out where we should build more lanes on a road system, or where we should put a new stoplight. You know what I mean? You're helping the greater good. That's the argument.
Yeah. Or, you know, on the previous one to that, like if you took those last two, who's listening to stuff they don't want you to know and where?
Yes, that's true. That's true. Look, Pandora's jar is already unscrewed. You know what I mean? The badger's out of the bag. If there was a canary in the coal mine of this, the canary is dead. The canary was asphyxiated long ago, probably back in the late 90s. And the stuff they don't want you to know is this. There is already damning evidence that cars are hackable. And this evidence is older than you think. This is not 2020 stuff. This happened years ago.
Yeah, a 2015 remote hacking demo really shook up the automotive industry. Major automakers responded by creating the Automotive Information Sharing and Analysis Center. Isaac? Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay, we'll go with Isaac. And this was designed, or the intent was to research and discuss best practices for securing this stuff, for actually implementing cybersecurity in vehicles.
So let's quickly, Ben, just go over this a little bit. In that 2015 example, I can't remember if it was Wired or who it was, but there was a journalist that was there and experienced what it was like to have his vehicle remotely controlled, fully remotely controlled. Because the computer, the onboard computers are sophisticated enough at this point to where with that, you know, always on, always connected technology, they were able, that the hackers or the demonstrators here were able to turn on every electronic piece of equipment within the vehicle, every component, to slow the car down, speed the car up, to control the steering even. It was really terrifying. The only upside to the whole thing was that the demonstrators, the hackers, it required them to have physical access to the vehicle before they could implement that full control in 2015.
Right.
In 2015.
In 2015, right. Yeah, you're on the money, man, because the issue here is that that 2015 car was, like many vehicles, effectively air-gapped, meaning there must have been some sort of physical interaction at the time of the hack or before the hack was implemented. But now it's 2020, and it would be naive to assume this technology and all the vulnerabilities it brings will not be exploited. If you're listening to this now, whether you love cars or you hate them or you are ambivalent to them, you don't care about their presence, you need to be aware. Big Brother, whatever Big Brother you want to specify, is already in your new car. And they are going to tell you that they are preventing hackers from hurting you. And when they say that, they are telling the truth. But like Emily Dickinson says, they're telling the truth, but they're telling it slant because they are also fully capable of doing everything those hackers would do, every single thing. They just haven't done it yet, at least officially. And and that's where we are. You know, we are as a species, as drivers, as car owners, and as pedestrians, we are entering a world, we're entering a new normal. There's no turning back. This is going to happen. It's already happening. You know, Elvis has left the building. and now you have to wonder, if this technology exists, what will it be used for? And what will the motivations be? What will the fallout be? What will the consequences be? We want to hear from you. We have a lot of truck drivers in our audience. We have a lot of our fellow listeners are driving in deliveries. A lot of us love road trips. We are a car culture, you know. So where do you think this is going? What have you seen? Like, I would love to hear if anybody has been affected by this already, if you're driving for a fleet and maybe your administrator knew some stuff about you that surprised you and they were like, oh, hey, you know, Jane or John Jorgensen, it's interesting. You made way better time to Denver than you did last week. And you're like, what? How did you know I was in Denver last week? I wasn't driving my work truck. I was driving my own car.
So, this is something I want to bring up right here towards the end. If you are feeling just uneasy about this whole concept of, you know, someone, whoever it is, for any reason, watching where you go, what you do, and all of that in your vehicle, I would say go out to your car, your vehicle, whatever it is, check that diagnostic port, look underneath your chassis, take a little look anywhere on metal surfaces underneath your vehicle or in compartments, because these things are very tiny.
Mm-hmm.
They can fit really anywhere where there's a
check the wheel well.
Yeah, wheel well is really a really good place to check.
The really clever one from Better Call Saul was it was inside of a gas cap assembly. Mm-hmm. Yes. He had to pop it off with a screwdriver, and before he found it, he disassembles his entire car before having an aha moment when he realizes it's inside of the actual gas cap. So yeah, very, very small, and it's just going to keep getting smaller, you know?
So yes, do that. Check that. All of that stuff. Don't disassemble your car, please. But again, like, here's the other thing. If you're so worried about that, maybe don't be, because if you are like almost every person who drives a vehicle, you travel with a cellular phone of some kind and yes, you are transmitting, you know, unless you're extremely careful. And even if you are extremely careful, you're likely transmitting every place you go. How fast you're going, how long you stay at those places. The data that exists around that device is far more terrifying than the ones that could be in your vehicle.
Well said. Well said. So that's our show for today, but just because the episode ends doesn't mean the show ends. We want to hear from you. If you're driving right now and you are inspired to contact us, wait until you're out of your car and find us. We're on the internet. We're all over it. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Twitter, not just as a show, but as individuals.
If you would like to find me, you can do so on Instagram. I am at HowNowNoelBrown.
And I am on Twitter at BenBolinHSW. I am on Instagram, in a burst of creativity, calling myself at Ben Bolin.
You can find me on Instagram. I am Matt Frederick. There's an E in there, underscore iHeart. And yeah, I haven't posted in a long time, but maybe I'm going to start posting pictures of, I don't know, close-up shots of my backyard. That's pretty much it right now.
I want to see that yellow submarine cutout in its full glory, Matt.
Oh, yeah?
With you posing behind it, peeking through the little portholes. Can you do that for us?
Sure, but only if I can get... Only if you guys will give me permission to Photoshop your faces in there, because there are four holes, so yeah. I could get all four of us in there.
That'd be great. I give full permission.
Ben?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that chicken has flew the coop, man. You have many... Many pictures of our faces. All I would ask as a personal favor is that you try to find one where I at least don't look sketchy. I know that's a tall milkshake, but
all right.
Okay, so if Matt gets 1,000 new followers, will post this picture.
Please don't follow
Make
me.
Make it happen. 1,000.
Here's the 1,000 and beyond. We also have if you're a person who says, wow, guys, you just talked about how scary the internet is. I'm terrified to do that. I don't want to be on the internet. We get it. You can contact us a different way. We have a phone number.
That's right. It is 1-833-STDWYTK.
We've been getting tons of amazing messages since all of this stuff has been going down. Thank you to everyone who has reached out. Thinking about you, Wayne. Yes, I have been getting your messages. Thinking about Ben, you were mentioning truck drivers or fleet vehicle drivers. We've been getting a ton of people writing in about that. I'm going to share with you guys one particular call we got in from someone thinking hard about the broader implications of our current situation and his completely salient arguments about why we could be in a very dangerous position with regards to the United States and China. Just so many great, great things coming in. Thank you to everyone. Thank you. Continue, please.
And if none of that quite bags your badgers, if you hate phones, if you hate social media, never fear, friends. Fellow conspiracy realists, we have one way you can always get at us every day of the year until we get blackbagged 24/7. And that is this. We have a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.